Seems that more and more these days, new cars are loaded with all sorts of goodies and gizmos crammed into the dashboard and the steering wheel. Lots of these are designed to be voice-activated or hands-free, so you can change the song, make a call, update your Facebook status, all while supposedly keeping your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel and keeping us safer.
Well, not so fast. According to a pair of new studies, these devices might actually be doing more harm than good, and many of the systems in today's cars are causing distraction for drivers, in some cases more so than a cell phone conversation would.
Joining us now is study leader David Strayer. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Utah and director of the Applied Cognition Lab, where he studies distracted driving. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So, David, as we said, you know, cars these days, they come with a lot of bells and whistles, a lot of technology to keep pace with the gadget-heavy world that we live in. So for anyone who hasn't been to the car dealership today, can you give us a sense of what's out there?
Well, almost every car has a color display. Some of them are large, bigger than your computer, probably in your office, 17 inches in some cases. They come with voice-activated technology so that you can talk to your car, in some cases update Facebook, but in almost all cases allows you to place an outgoing call or change the radio or change the temperature in some cases. So they've become very sophisticated. In many remarks, it's actually starting to become as sophisticated as what you see in terms of the cockpit of an airplane. Unlike an airplane that's been kind of refined so that it doesn't overload the driver, in many cases, the technology's in there without having fully been evaluated for making sure that it's easy to use.
And that's where your new study's coming in, trying to evaluate the impact of these technologies. What are you looking to measure, and how did you conduct these studies?
So this is a large-scale project that we worked on with the AAA Foundation. How we did it was we used the methodology that was used to evaluate pilot workload. We used the precise techniques in terms of physiological measures and other techniques that verified the workload of the Apache helicopter, at least in prototype. And then we tested, in one case, six of the different auto manufacturers when people were trying to use voice dialing or changing the radio, and then used a scale that we developed to rate how difficult the systems were. And then compared that to other things that have been in the car for, 70 or 80 years, like listening to the radio and such. And what we found was that if you look at activities like the voice dialing placing an outgoing call, some of the systems were actually relatively easy to use, not any different than listening to a book on tape. And others were more than twice as difficult to use, frustrating enough that people were swearing at their cars because it simply just wasn't doing what they wanted.
Well, it's interesting that all of these systems come with, you know, different applied risks depending on how hard or easy they are. What was the most distracting for drivers?
What we found is whenever there was a system made errors. So it's simply you told it to do something like change the radio and instead it changed the air conditioning. Or you told it to place an outgoing call and it dialed somebody else. The systems that were error prone and just unpredictable in terms of their behavior really frustrated the driver. The worst case for us in the studies that we did were interactions with Siri, when people were actually using Siri to send text messages or post to Facebook or change their calendar. Functions that are currently available, and if people have Siri, they may well be trying to do that while they're driving. And on our 5-point scale, where 5 is the worst possible thing we could imagine in terms of mental cognitive overload, Siri was a 4. So pretty close to that high-level mark.
So I laughed at a couple of those stories gone wrong. But the serious downside is if you start to get these malfunctions with Siri or others, that is actually, as you try to correct the error, I suppose, taking even more of your attention, creating more distraction than most other things you do in a car.
See, we think about distraction as basically the byproduct of something that's competing for attention with the driver's primary goal of staying on the road. And there are lots of things that have been around for, years, eating and talking to passengers, listening to the radio. But these new technologies are so mentally demanding, and when they go wrong and say they're calling, your boss when you've decided to call in sick and are out playing golf or something like that. Those things turn out to be extremely competing in terms of the amount of attention that goes to the task of driving. And you may actually make driving be the secondary task. And then what happens is, what we find is, and these are on-road studies too, so these are actually looking at people there in the residential sections in Salt Lake where we did the testing, people would stop looking in crosswalks for pedestrians. Hmm. So these are things where it's putting other people, cars, and pedestrians at risk as people struggle with this technology.
And an ethical point, I believe you had someone in the passenger seat to watch for those moments when the drivers in the real world didn't see that pedestrian.
Yeah, we were definitely worried and concerned about the fact that we're having people do things that has the potential to be a distraction. When we have a set of driving simulators in my laboratory, too, and when we would actually have people drive without the extra spotter, we had like two people crash in the driving simulator when they're trying to, you know, interact with Siri. So we put a spotter in the passenger seat whose sole job was to just kind of identify if there were pedestrians or traffic or other kinds of things that the driver should avoid, just to try and make it so that we wouldn't cause harm on the road.
One thing that did strike me looking at your list of activities that could distract you in the car, all the way up to, you know, something like Siri, which was very distracting, is that just about anything you do in a car besides driving is distracting. Talking to people is distracting. Listening to the radio or an online tape, that's really distracting. I mean, is the takeaway here that to be really safe, all we should really do is drive in stoic silence?
No. I think actually, we need to be careful about how we allocate our attention. But on our 5-point scale, listening to a radio was 1.2, so just a little bit above what we would see if you were just not doing anything else. So we're not so worried about listening to the radio. We're not so worried about listening to an audiobook. Talking to a passenger, it turns out that passenger, if they're an adult, they have an extra set of eyes, and so they help the driver out even if they become distracted. Of course, that doesn't work with teens, but for adults, you basically get that protective effect. So there are plenty of things you can do. When you get to activities like talking on a cell phone, that pushes to a little over 2. So for many people, that's when you're starting to say that's where we need to start worrying about some of that technology, and there are clear cases of crashes and fatalities on our highways because of people who are chatting and blow right through an intersection. But what happens is the voice-based technologies to send text messages, many of the cars are being equipped with that, or to do more even sophisticated and complicated things like updating Facebook and the like, those things push to level 3 or even 4. So when the dialogue used to be about distraction and cell phones, that's still present, but there's a lot of new things that are put in the car that are actually substantially and measurably worse.
We're talking with David Strayer of the University of Utah about in-car technology and distracted driving. He's been doing research on that. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234.
Do you have technology like this in your car? Do you use it? And if so, do you find it more distracting than maybe what it's worth? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How do you feel about other drivers on the road using technology like this? You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with David Strayer of the University of Utah about in-car technology and distracted driving. He was the leader on two new studies which show that hands-free and voice-activated technologies, despite their intentions, are actually distracting drivers.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have this kind of voice-activated technology in your car? Do you use it? And if so, do you find yourself distracted by it? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller. We've got Michael on the line in Milwaukee. Michael, hi.
Hi. David, I was wondering if age was taken into consideration of the study. I am 22 years old. I'm actually calling from my car technology right now. And I know I have a lot better, a lot easier time using these kinds of things than, say, my mother, who's in her 50s.
Michael, interesting thought. David, did you look at this by age?
So we've looked at people in my lab from 16 to 92. The most recent research was people who've had an average of about 25 years of age, but between the ages of 20 and 40. But we would expect that as you start to get older, probably not in the 50s, but if you start to move more into the mid-60s, that interacting with this technology can become more difficult just because of the traditional attentional demands that start to increase and become a bit more challenging in older age. So, in fact, to some extent, the caller is right that if one of the groups who are going to expect to have a difficult time kind of interacting with this technology are some of the older adults as they try and purchase these systems.
Well, Michael, thanks a lot for that call and that question. And we're going to move on next to Pat joining us in Duluth. Hi, Pat.
Hi. We just got a new car this summer, and it's a model that has a little camera in the back so that when you back up or make a right-hand turn, there's a screen that comes on. And I noticed three times where backing down our driveway, two times I could have potentially hit the mailman because I didn't look there. I was watching the screen, and that was a terrifying thought. But the worst was in a parking lot I was backing up, and for some reason I did not notice the person behind the car. And this young man shouted, "I'm right behind you." And so I've stopped using that screen, and I've gone back to turning my head around and to the sides and using my eyes. And maybe that doesn't make sense, but that was my experience. And the other thing that's very odd is I began to feel sort of that the car could do more than a normal car could with all this stuff. And so that was just a feeling I had in the beginning.
Okay,
the other thing is changing, like if you have the radio on and you want to go to a CD, that screen is there and you're pushing it. I think that's a distraction too, potentially.
Okay, thank you, Pat. I mean, David, is this a case of over-reliance on technology maybe leading to, I don't know, complacency? Not that Pat is being complacent. It's a hard thing to learn new habits, but do we over-rely on technology?
See, I think what she just described is a classic case of unintended consequences. And so the backup camera that she describes clearly provides some information that you didn't have before. But if you rely on that backup camera without looking over your shoulder, you're ignoring all the other information that you would have gathered before as you're trying to back up. And as a consequence, you can clearly have situations where you almost run over somebody that you wouldn't have before if you just didn't have that technology. So, you know, it's one of these things where when you start to rely on technology, it may change the way that the driver behaves and may actually have them, they'll stop doing kinds of things that were conferring safety. And you may have at least some accidents are directly the result of this unintended new technology in the vehicle.
Well, another consequence, maybe, I can't imagine anybody would flip open their laptop to do a Facebook update while driving on the highway. But with this voice-activated thing, is this, in effect, actively encouraging us to do distracting stuff that we wouldn't have even thought to do before?
I think that's certainly one of the concerns, is that there's all these functions that you would just maybe not even had a possibility of doing before. Certainly 5 or 10 years ago, it wasn't some of that technology didn't exist. I don't know, Facebook's not, you know, not 10 years old, and certainly some of the connectivity that that the cars are allowing now, you know, just is all of a sudden kind of creating this you know, smorgasbord of distracting technologies, without necessarily some clear guidance about what you might versus might not be able to do safely. And that's really what we were trying to do with the project, was to say, you know, there are certain things you may be able to do in the vehicle that maybe you shouldn't do. And the activities that are really the things that are probably the most reasonable to do are things that support the driver in terms of, you know, driving. You know, I mean, yeah, you can use voice-based technology to change the temperature and do a variety of other kinds of things, but maybe social media isn't one of those that mixes well with driving.
Right. Well, let's go a little deeper in that direction. So it seems safe to say that consumers do want technology like this, but what can automakers do to make them safer?
That was part of our research, was to try and identify what would happen. We learned, for example, The act of talking, speaking like I'm doing now, is far more mentally demanding than the act of listening. So we could develop, if you were going to have a system where you were going to be interacting with mail messages on the way into work, you could set that up so that you could listen to the messages, but you just couldn't send a reply back till you got to the office. That changes the workload from a Category 3, if you're trying to both read and reply to messages, to a Category 2, a little bit lower workload than we see with talking on a cell phone. So by kind of developing and kind of identifying exactly why we're distracted by various kinds of things, we can then basically say maybe you shouldn't do these kinds of activities because they're too demanding, but here's a set of activities that's nowhere near as mentally draining.
All right, David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
David Strayer is a professor of psychology at the University of Utah. He's director of the Applied Cognition Lab, where he studies distracted driving.